And Carolyn Yeager has written many articles, German radar articles. She's published a book with the Barnes Review recently called Adolf Hitler, the Artist Within the Warlord, Adolf Hitler You Didn't Know. So she'll be coming on. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Carolyn. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I was listening. Like, you look at, you think about Adolf Hitler. You know, he had, no matter what kind of a party you have, you're going to have a range of people in it. You know, you're going to have different wings and, you know, from this end to the other. So you have to have a very strong, charismatic, popular, and powerful leader to hold all these people together.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, and he had to have done that. He had to do that, but he didn't seem to lose his, you know, his ideals for what they were standing for. So he had the ability to make everybody accept him as the one authority and go along with what he said no matter what.
Yeah, because he kept his virtue. He maintained his virtue. He didn't sell out. He didn't betray the truth.
Yeah, that's true.
He was worthy, yeah.
He was very careful about that, wasn't he? He was not going to get married. He was not going to allow, he was not going to go out with women who there would be some kind of gossip about, because that would, you know, be bad for his position and make people.
Yeah, sure. There's no real sexual scandals with Adolf Hitler. No, not no much talk about that. And the Jews love to make up lies and criticize him, but they never really came up with anything legitimate.
Right. He was lived a monastic life almost in order not to have any gossip about himself. So that was important. And
yeah.
we've had a lot of charismatic leaders, but we've had a few anyway, but they have not been that careful in their private life, you know, and that's brought them down.
Yeah, it's good to have this conversation about leadership in the truth movement and leadership about Adolf Hitler. Like, I always like to talk about Adolf Hitler. We could talk more about him. We've got another 45 minutes left because he's really like the leader, you know.
Well, but I brought that up, you know, and people elsewhere, and people are just like, oh, no, that, you know. And you know how probably more people than not in what we would consider the identity movement would say absolutely not to that. And at least half of them like Hitler. So, and it's particularly because partly, I think it goes along with it that if they can take the German out of Hitler, if you can take Hitler out of Germany and make him this European hero, and they do that best by, and I know you've gone along with some of this, so I'm trying to, you know, I recognize that, but we're still friends. Make him kind of a mystical character, religion or spiritual character, then it takes him out of that and makes him somebody for all of us. But, you know, I fight that because I think that's not what he was. And you end up with a Hitler who's just not, I don't know, he's just not even, you know, a real person. He's too much, and I think it becomes like a comic book character. So many comic book heroes.
Oh, I see, I see people want a hero. It's nice to have a hero. People like to have heroes, but they should be real.
He was, you know. And then we are expected, this is another thing I've thought since we talked about, we thought we would talk about Hitler as the leader. If you make someone into a more religious figure, then it's like you can worship them rather than follow them. You know, the real Hitler needs to be followed, that just like the real Jesus said, follow me, you know, do as I do, use me as your example or as your model, not worship me. Never wanted to be. I don't, you know.
I know. With Buddha, the Buddha said the best thing, the best way to honor him is to actually practice his teachings, is not to worship him, but actually put it into practice and develop yourself and work on yourself, the Buddha said. That's the best way to honor him.
I don't think anybody who's ever attained a high level ever wanted to be worshipped or saw that was worth anything at all. It's the people who, and maybe people who are using this person in order to create a religion that they can control, like that, that will say, you know, we'll turn it into a worship thing rather than becoming like. In fact, they say about, in Christian circles, they say about Jesus Christ, well, there was only one, and there'll never be another one, you know, and he was it, and then nobody can be like him, nobody can reach that, you know, he was it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to honor him, hosannas, hosannas. And it was Hitler who said that the whole idea of a Christian heaven where you sing hosannas all day is so, was so hideously unappealing to him that he preferred Islam, the Islam heaven or you know, place after death to the Christian.
Did Hitler say that?
Oh yeah, he did. That's people want to say he loved Islam. He didn't love Islam, but he did say that the Islam gave its warriors and a better afterlife and motivation for fighting for them.
How did it give a better afterlife? Was it the 72 virgins or what was it?
Yeah, anything like that. Yeah, that they had a good time, you know, that they were.
I think the Christian heaven, the angels are just worshiping God, right? They're not having such a party. It's not such a good time.
Be in the light of God.
Well, we've got a call. We got a call coming through here.
Okay, good.
I'm just adding to the group. Hello, is the caller there?
Hi, Brian, this is Mark.
Mark, hey, I know Mark from previous conversations. Good to have you on the line, yeah. And so you're here with Carolyn Yeager. Do you have a question?
Yes. And by the way, I've really enjoyed your show today, and I had never heard of Carolyn before, but learned about her through your show and then found her website and a lot of really interesting stuff on her website. And even shares her results from 23andMe, which kind of prompted me to go ahead and log into that for my results just for comparison. But anyway, my question is if she has any particular theory that she buys into in terms of like where the different races that we have in the world came from.
Oh, good question for Carolyn. What do you think?
Well, hi, Mark. That's really not my area at all. To me, it's evolutionary. That's my answer. I'm not an expert on evolution theory, but I basically believe in it, and I think that's. I think evolution. I think the whole story of evolution, when you think about it, is so exciting. It's so exciting to see life developing, and I do have ideas, which I used to spend time thinking about, that I'll just try to put it real blunt, real quick, that we, our consciousness, our individual, I don't even know if our consciousnesses are, if the idea individual consciousness makes any sense in reality, because, you know, I'm limited by being in this physical world and physical body, and so we see I see things, and we all see things a certain way, and we have our words that we use, but I believe that we are part of a very much larger consciousness. It is our own identity, our own consciousness, much much bigger than what we're aware of in an individual life. And our consciousness, though, has been part of evolution, has been here in some form for all along, and so we have participated in the evolution of life from you know, whatever was beginning, I'm not good at this, rocks or something, you know, minerals or something, but gas, which stabilized or whatever, and eventually, I was thinking just the other day about how it came to me again that, you know, for a long time, there was only plant life, vegetation, plant life. Plant life doesn't have eyes or ears. I was thinking about the ears on a duck, whether ducks have ears, where their ears are. And I thought, well, you know, plants don't have ears. They don't, I knew that ducks could hear. And so it's like all animals can hear. And we are part of the animal, higher extension of the animal life. Don't hear or see, but I think how many billions of years, at least in our time, it was just that on this earth, just continually getting to a more complex organization, and that's what evolution is, a higher and higher organization of the life of the entity. So that's my idea there, but I wanted to ask you about your genetics at 23andMe, because I was talking to my nephew, and he'd like to have his, but he's having some financial problems, so I was wondering how I could maybe buy one for him and get his, because I want to compare it to my own, you know, because we're that close.
Oh, yeah.
Related. So how does yours compare with mine?
Well, I'm looking at mine right now, and it shows that it says 100% European, and it says 41.9% Scandinavian. It says Norway under that. I don't know how they can say that for sure, Norway, but I do know my mom was, you know, of Norwegian ancestry. Mm-hmm. And then it says British and Irish, 27.1%, and it says United Kingdom under that, and then it says French and German, and it says Germany under that, it says 1.6%, and it says Finnish 1%, and then broadly Northwestern European 27%, broadly Southern European 0.3%, and broadly European 1.2%.
Yeah, so that's, you know, you're 100%. Mine says 98.9, something like that. I'm looking for it right now. I have to bring it up.
Your picture looks very white, Carolyn. Your picture looks very white, but it's an old picture, I bet.
Oh, it's kind of old, yeah. but no, it's, of course I'm all white. And they added on mine that there was no, I didn't ask for this, but I was happy to find out they added no Ashkenazi. And,
You can stay on the show. That's okay.
Native American or something, whatever they call American Indians. So a lot of people have that. And but I don't have any of that. And I would have known I didn't have it because, you know, there's no way it could have gotten into my family line. But they, not the Ashkenazi, but I was really happy about that because people want to think that everybody in Europe has got some of, you know, it's got some Jew in them. It's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking down a little further. I guess I clicked another button where it gives more of the details, and mm-hmm. It does show under that category Ashkenazi Jewish 0% for me. And the interesting thing too, some years ago, my son ended up getting his DNA done through 23andMe. Actually, quite a long time before I did it, and it did connect us via the DNA showing that he's my son, which is pretty kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah, well,
it should,
you know, people, now, here's another thing, people will want to dismiss this, they say, oh, it's run by Jews, oh, 23andMe is Jewish, I don't know whether it is or not, but, and they're trying to do this and do that, well, I don't see that there's anything done like that to mine, because mine says 99.8% European. And here's what they've gone to it. They stuck on 1/10 of 1% broadly East Asian and 1/10 of 1% unassigned. You don't have that? And all this is European.
Yeah, I got zeros on those ones you just mentioned.
Oh, well, I figured they added that to everybody, but I guess not. So you are really pure.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess so.
They found a couple of things, a little tiny bit there in me that didn't fit the European, I guess. I don't know.
You know, my parents are from Holland, so I wouldn't be surprised if I have some Jew in me, because the Holland's been dominated by Jews for the last three centuries, you know. So I haven't tried 23andMe. Maybe I'll do it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I keep talking about myself, but I'll make this quick. My ancestry is the largest amount is broadly Northern European, and then the next largest is French and German. I don't know where that from. It's German. I don't know where the French. I do think that they have a category at 23andMe that combines French and German together. That's what I think.
Yeah,
but
that makes sense.
Wrong, but anyway, my family was Southern Germany in Baden, and they were Roman Catholic, and they all went to the ones who became, you know, who I came from, went to Hungary. They were, you know, they were at a time in the 1700s when they were settling, when Germans were being asked to go over there to Hungary and settle this land after they kicked out the Turks and the Ottoman Empire from there, and resettle it and with Germans. And so that's where they were for like five generations in this German town in Hungary. Now you say, well, there's lots of Jews in Hungary, but they were in this German Catholic town that had been built for them, and they didn't have anything to do with Jews. And I think it's their Catholicism that did that, more than if they had been Protestants who had remained in Germany. I don't know, but I think they just married among themselves.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, Mark, do you have any theories on race that you'd like to share with the audience?
I have to say that I kind of agree with what Carolyn said, is that even though I've had different ideas in the past, I guess perhaps based on religious beliefs, I have come more and more to believe that in evolution, and some will say, well, you know, if you believe in evolution, then you don't believe in God. Well, I believe that evolution, it may be that that's the way that God chose to create, you know, and there's so much about it we don't understand. So I certainly am leaning in the direction now, whereas because of my religious background, you know, I tended initially to kind of think that evolution was not true, but now I'm coming more and more where I feel that there is evolution of some kind. But as far as understanding how it all happened through the years, that's so hard, because the further back you go, the harder it is to tell the details, you know?
Yeah. Well, the times that are given, you know, these billions of years and so on, are so huge that we can't make any sense out of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, but I think it's true, because now things are speeding up and everything is changing so fast compared to the way it used to be. It took forever. But who knows how time, what time really is.
I could just describe my own thinking. My own background is I grew up Western thinking, believing in evolution. That's part of our educational system. But when I got more into the truth movement, reading about conspiracy, I think the international Jews have been suppressing a lot of sort of archaeological digs that they're trying to hide from us. And I've been read about half of this book, Forbidden Archaeology, by Michael Cremo. His co-author is Richard Thompson. And he describes, anatomically modern human skeletons going back millions of years, which have been buried or suppressed from us. And also from a Buddhist view, the Buddhists humans descend from devas, from angels, that we came down from the higher realms. We didn't evolve. So basically, I didn't just take it on faith, but now I kind of think we came down from the higher realms. I also had I talked to a woman with a PhD in genetics, and she said when she was studying genetics like 30 years ago, her and her colleagues felt that studying the DNA, it couldn't have just been happened by evolution, that it was intelligently designed by someone in the upstairs, either aliens or devas. And they felt it was intelligent design, but because she was in a university environment, they wouldn't discuss this. They wouldn't admit this because it could cost their jobs. So now I think evolution is real, but with human beings, I think they could have been like Cro-Magnon man and other species which died out. But I don't really believe in the evolution of us coming from monkeys. I think this is an international Jewish conspiracy. Oh, you just come from monkeys as a way to undermine the Bible, undermine our religious beliefs. But I think Michael Kremo's evidence indicates, he says they found in Illinois and also in Colorado in coal mines, skeletons going back 300 million years, which is astonishing. And several cases in Europe are 15 million year old skeletons.
And I don't think the Jews can suppress information like that, that if it's known of this book saying these things. I think some of these books are a little bit, I don't know how, you know, how much they, you know, how believable they are. Because I just don't go along with the coming down from higher realms. I believe that life is one thing, you know, one whole thing. So it's not, there's not that this is different from that. How would they mix and match together? I think that we're all, that there's the higher and there's, that we're on a level of physical reality that has a lot of limitations on purpose to slow everything down so that we have consequences and to what we do. Not for moral reasons so much, but so that we can experience things differently. You know, we can experience what we're doing and what comes from it. And we can't just, wave a wand and make things change or go away. We are kind of stuck in a situation that can be very unpleasant at times, but it's got valuable benefits so that we want to do it. And I think that we're free. I think we're very free once we reach a point of higher development, which would be higher organization, higher brain organization, and physical body organization, and so on. So, and we are very free to choose, make choices. We're not forced into anything, but just the evolution, to say we come from apes, that's not right. It goes in stages, and so we don't come from apes. There were apes before there was man, but some people do question that link. They say there's no link. There's no
missing link. Yeah, they haven't found the missing link.
I don't know. I really don't, because I haven't studied it, and I don't have time to study all that. So I'm not going to. Have you looked into all that, Mark?
No. I mean, I haven't. I'm interested enough that, you know, when I come across certain things, I may actually purchase a book. Like I purchased one the other day that's quite scholarly that relates to evolution and science and I haven't even started reading it yet. It may be totally over my head, but when I saw it, I had to get it, and so it's likely I'm interested in exploring some of these things, but I haven't really had a chance to do it as much as I would like.
Yeah, my feeling in general, and I have been very religious in a couple of periods in my life, and I was naturally liked church and God and stuff when I was a little girl, and I even liked the Bible, and I didn't read the Bible, but I learned verses, you know, and memorized verses because I went to this Sunday school for a while, because I wasn't brought up by my parents in any religion. And so even though my larger family was Catholic, my dad didn't like that. And so I was very free, you know. I've always been very free about it. I am never was forced in anything, but I chose to go to some few churches here and there growing up and got all involved in them. And but I always found something was just satisfactory eventually, because I wanted it to make sense. And I think that I was going somewhere with this, but now I've lost it.
Your belief in evolution or not believing in what the Bible said, you know, your belief in the Bible, I guess, came and went.
I did a lot of research, my own research on the Bible. And, you know, there's in the whole study of modern, I know this is the liberals who say, you know, Jesus exists, and very good. I basically think that's probably, but I think that religion has been used to control. You know, it was the simplest thing in the more primitive days of mankind to use, because we didn't have science, so we didn't know anything. And so they'd say, well, this is, you know, they would come along and say, we understand this, the great God has spoken to us and told us this, and they were able to convince people that God wanted them to do certain things and they needed to follow these rules. And and most people found that society went along pretty well when they had these rules, you know, because everybody was doing the same thing, and so there was a benefit to that. And so it continued, but I do think no real basis for spirituality. I believe in spiritual reality, but religion as it exists today, I don't have much legitimacy.
Well, your sound cuts in and out a bit. We missed a few words, but I got most of it.
I'm hearing some funny background noise.
Yeah, maybe you can click on your mic, Carol, and maybe just click it on and off. It might improve your sound a bit. Well, Mark's on the phone as well. That's expected to be a bit of background noise. Like I mentioned, go ahead.
I was going to say, I found the title of this book I was referring to that I had purchased. Haven't even started reading it yet, but it's on my Kindle. And it's a very scholarly book. It's called Evolution, the Logic of Biology. And it's by John S. Torday, T-O-R-D-A-Y, and Virender K. Rehan, R-E-H-A-N. And it's published by Wiley. So, I guess I learned about that from, David Ray Griffin. You know, he's very much into process philosophy and process theology. And so I think if I'm on an email list from one of those process theology things. And so it I guess this guy was going to speak at some event, and then I saw he had a book, so I decided to get the book. But I know it's something along the lines of trying to show how evolution, it can be consistent with the belief in God. In other words, that it's not so much. They try to make people think, the really fundamentalist religious people try to make you think that if you believe in evolution, then you must not believe in God. You must be an atheist.
Yeah, I agree. There should be no problem with evolution and God at the same time. You know, why can't things change and there still be a God? You know, I can understand that.
I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I never saw a problem with that. I just want to mention with Michael Kremmel's work, this was published 20 years ago, and he cites a lot of source documents. So what he's saying is that things have been published, like in the 1860s and other times, things would be in local newspapers and stories, but when scientific journals would finally be published, this stuff would be filtered out. He doesn't say there's any Jewish conspiracy that would probably ruin his career, but he says there's a knowledge filtration system, gives hundreds of examples, and gives his sources. For instance, during the gold rush in the 1860s in California, they found these stone mortars and pestles, which are like 50 million years old. And this was published in newspapers at the time. They had photos of them. Now they're kept in Berkeley University away from the public. So this is screened away from the public because they don't want to upset the official story that there's 50 million year old stone pestles discovered during the gold rush in California. But he actually was given access and he could see these things, and there's photographs of them like 100 years old, but it's not given to the public. So there's a lot of examples like this. So who else but the international Jews would have the power to have this knowledge filtration system? So I think what they're trying to hide is the maybe the history of the white race, the history of a great ancient history. They're trying to give us this official story that we came out of Africa 60,000 years ago. We're all blacks. Of course, they make the blacks first, and that we all evolved. So I think that evolutional story is a lie, and the science proves that we didn't come out of Africa 60,000 years ago. That's a lie. But I think it goes back much, much further.
Yeah, I don't think we had all been black, and I don't think we had Africa had to been black. And but I don't see how you can have something from 15 million years ago. How could there be stone pestles that they have can tell are 15 million years old?
Well, it's 50 million. It's because of the level of rock they discovered in during the California gold mines. They're digging deeper and deeper and deeper looking for gold. It's just the level of, they describe the level of sediment, like the granite, the coal, the various levels. It's the level where they find things is how they estimate the age.
They do say that bones they find are like, you know, 10 million years old or something, but I just, I don't know. I just use my own logic.
Well, it's something we're not told. Like the Jews control our universities with cultural Marxism. There's so much, they lied to us about the Holocaust. They lied to us about World War II. So what else are they lying to us? So his evidence indicates there's this knowledge filtration system going back two centuries in the United States and Europe, like two centuries. And there's lots of things were published in the, 100 years ago or more, which were in newspapers at the time, which you don't hear about now. For instance, the Grand Canyon around 1909, they discovered all kinds of Egyptian artifacts in this huge cavernous area of the Grand Canyon, which could house about 50,000 people, with statues of a Buddha in there, all this stuff. And there's taken away by the Smithsonian Museum, which is an arm of the American government, and all this stuff is just kept secret. And there's areas of the northern Grand Canyon that are off bounds to the public. They're not allowed in, and they have these Egyptian names. So it's very mysterious. And you can read newspaper articles from 1909, local stories about all these Egyptian artifacts that were found in the Grand Canyon, but now it's gone. No word of this at all. No discussion of this. If you go to the Smithsonian today, nothing. They don't discuss it. So obviously something's being suppressed. So there's a number of cases like this. So, the preponderance of evidence seems to be there's something true happening here.
When these kinds of stories and books and people who bring these things up, what it feels to me like they just want to put a wet blanket over all of our concerns today, because if all this stuff goes back so far, we don't know anything about it. Well, it just changes everything, and we don't know what we're talking about. We're ignorant, and we might as well just give up, I guess, because what do we know? We don't know anything.
Well, I think with the internet, we're discovering that all of human history is a lie, like with ancient pyramids discovered all over the world, and the evidence of comet fragments hitting the north 12,800 years ago, wiping out a previous advanced ancient civilization, like Graham Hancock's done a lot of work on this in the last 20 years. It seems to be pretty much proven. So it seems, I would see, from an international Jewish perspective, they want to suppress any evidence. It actually states in the Protocols of Zion, We suppress any history from the previous centuries that's of advantage to the Goyim, that's not of advantage to us. We just reveal history showing the mistakes of the Goyim. So the Jews are probably desperate to suppress any sort of history of the white race or great successes in past eons. They're probably desperate to suppress this, but there's so much coming out now with the internet that this is actually a very exciting time, you know, like the Bosnian pyramid and things like that. There's just so much evidence.
Do you think that DNA is really what they say it is? You think they really know? Like this 23andMe, do they really have the ability to test everybody's DNA and come out with accurate results? Do you think that's an accurate science today?
I think so. I think that is. There's probably more to the DNA. It's probably quite mysterious because most of it, they don't know what the coding's about. But I think that's true, like to discover whether you're Dutch or Irish or German or whatever. I think that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your answer, Brian. But it's like I haven't had, you know, really deep, thorough education in that subject matter, so I can't speak to it like somebody who, you know, like this book I just mentioned a moment ago, where you got people who've basically specialized in these fields, and have written a book. That's why I want to read the book and see if I can get some insight into it, even though I'm never going to be at the level of somebody who's studied it their whole life, you know?
Yeah, I guess the question what you have time to study, but it's exciting to study this stuff, and I think a lot is coming out. Of course, like I mentioned, YouTube, there's lots of YouTube videos and all these kind of things. If you want to be a Mick expert, right, just watch a few YouTube videos, be a Mick expert.
I don't trust the YouTube videos at all.
Yeah, I know. I can understand that.
I can sign off on the call now and listen to the rest of the show. But it was really a great show, and I really appreciated learning about your guest. And I'm definitely gonna I'll probably contact her through her website.
Well, good having
you
on,
so
Mark. Yeah, thanks for having you on, Mark. Thanks for calling in. It's always good to have callers.
Okay.
Appreciate the question.
Right. Okay, thanks. Goodbye.
Okay, see you. Yeah, so Carolyn, we got about 8 minutes left, 9 minutes left. What would you like to talk about?
Well, what should we cover that we haven't covered, Brian?
Well, I guess we touched on our favorite man, Adolf Hitler. Anything else? We talked a bit about being ostracized in the Truth Movement. It wasn't too bad for you. Do you know anyone else in the Truth Movement that had a good ostracism story, or any other truthers or National Socialists that you know of?
I was talking about my personal life. Ostracism in the Truth Movement. You know, on the one hand, I had very good, very good friendships and people being very nice and had good vibes. And on the other hand, I've had a lot of nasty attacks in the Truth Movement. But then people say I attack other people. So, but I've had certain people, you know, this thing that is the men's movement.
Yeah.
The truth is more like the identity.
Is that the Me Too men's movement? Me Too?
Not the Me Too, but the men who what the only men can. I never wanted to be some kind of a leader, but I'm very outspoken, and I've never been a woman who could, which is not the kind they like, who could just stand by my man, you know, and just stand behind my man. And I've always been my own big mouth or something. You know, I've always done my own thing and done something.
So you're not the little wifey, you're not the wifey type.
Not the little supporting female. And they don't like that. A lot of them really, really don't. They think it's National Socialism too, you know, that the woman has her role. And the men have their role, and they have to, you know, the men are in the ruling role, and the women should support the men or be quiet or this or that, you know. I'm not saying, you know, I don't gravitate toward those, and they don't gravitate toward me so much, but I have had quite a bit of abuse from that type of thinking.
You can understand feminism was invented by the Jews in the 1960s with Gloria Steinem to undermine the white Christian family, to lower the birth rate, to create conflict between women and men. I mean, you know all that, right? So they have a legitimate point to some extent, I guess, to complain about the Jewish created feminism.
Yeah, but a lot of these men, they really have taken that up, you know, or they'll go back to ancient Rome and say, well, this is the man controlled the family and his wife, and the woman was controlled by her father and then by her husband, and that's their ideal. And this traditionalism, that so many, this word traditional came up again, and I was all for, thought that was a good word until I realized what it was, and then, you know, and then I'm even kind of for it, yeah, but I'm thinking of other women, I guess. When it comes to me, it's like, that doesn't work, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah. In traditional roles, there were women who were quite intelligent or independent. Like in Hitler's time, there were some great women like Leni Riefenstahl and this great pilot who knew Hitler, another woman. So there were some outstanding women in Hitler's time.
Well, there were. And Hitler also had quite a bit of that male supremacy in his thinking. But he recognized that there were these outstanding women, as you say, and he never held them back, and he was quite proud of them, and he was just a very nice person, really, Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, he was.
He really was.
He really was.
And
but next time, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
But I think we should, I don't know. I guess I want people to think along my lines, the lines I do. I'm sure that's what it is, and I guess I'll probably continue doing that. I'll just be pushing for my way of thinking, and other people will be going along with it somewhat, or they'll be resisting it. And I really am not. I realize I'm not the future. That's for sure. So I guess I'll end with this. I kind of worry about the future, but I guess older people always do. Older people always say, my God, you know, what's come of things? You know, these young people are never going to be able to manage anything.
That's justified, though, because in our era right now, it's justified to be worried about the future, because we've been losing to the Jews, especially since World War II. Our culture's been losing, and it's the older people that can remember the 1950s and 60s when things were more stable, crime rate was lower, societies more together. So no wonder you're concerned about the future. I'm concerned about the future. I feel I've had it pretty good. I grew up in the 60s and 70s. You know, I was a pretty stable family. Whereas right now, I think kids have a harder time than I did as a kid.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible when you read the statistics, and, you know, yeah, I had a stable family. Everyone in my family was stable, but then I wasn't so stable. So that's where it, you know, started with my generation. I was one of the first ones. So, you know, in my circle. So there you go. I guess it's just the times, and also the kind of person you were, because I couldn't be a normie. You know, I just didn't work for me. I was always trying to be something, you know, reach out way out there. So but I think I'll end with this idea that what was it? I had it clear in my mind a minute ago. Our leadership, something to do with our leadership.
Yeah, well, if you had a strong, virtuous leadership to hold it together, you're saying that would be really good for society. You know, you need to have strong leadership and virtuous leadership.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a good point to make, but I talked too long. And
okay. Well, the time's going by. I've got another minute left to do if it comes back to you or not. But I think it's good that you're not an army. You're Jew-wise. You know, the truth about Hitler, what I appreciate you, Karen, is you're actually speaking. You actually say it, and it's on your website. You can repeat your website again. It's carolynyeager.net, and Yeager is spelled Y-E-A-G-E-R.
And I wanted to ask you something. I remember what it was. I'm sure you do think that we should be going after these issues straight on.
Like, yeah. Anything else? We're running out of time. But yeah, we should head the issue straight on and be honest and deal with it directly. I agree. So thanks for being on the show, Carolyn Yeager. And thanks for our caller, Mark. So we'll be on next week on Revolution Radio next Tuesday. So thanks, listeners, for listening. And this is the end of the Brian Root Show for now. So carry on, survive, and all the best till next week. See you later.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
These videos are dependent upon listeners' support, so please donate at the link below. Please like and subscribe. You can copy these videos wherever you like.